Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Friday, May 25th, 2018 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. And a wild ride it is. We are back live. My apologies for the last couple of days. Duty called, and so I was pulled away. But we're live today, this Friday, May 25th, 2018. So I am your host, Chris Hinckley. We are all Road Warriors, those who esteem ourselves to be. And as always, feel free to dive into the chat area at roadwarriorradio.chattango.com for interesting and lively discussion. A few things. We will we'll talk about Jordan Peterson. We'll talk about the Enlightenment, the Age of Reason. Just a little excerpt from a talk, you know, the Masonic and esoteric connections there. The Illuminized connections, if you will. An excerpt from Walden that I've been threatening to read for weeks now. I think it's fitting. At this point, it has been for days or weeks or even months. And something else that escapes me. I forget what it is. So maybe we'll figure out what that is too. But first, and this really could just be the broadcast. This could be it, and nothing else needs to be said. First, two things. One, there will never be security with so-called central banking. That sucking sound, the hidden tax of inflation, will always gobble up all wealth and savings. And there are a variety of means and ways that is accomplished, but you know that's part of that Tontine Ponzi scheme, really. So there will never be security with the so-called central banking system. The hidden tax of inflation will always eat out the substance of a society. And in conjunction with that, there will never be peace as long as the CIA exists. That's just the bottom line. I mean, it might as well be put that simply. There will never be peace as long as the CIA exists. The broader intelligence community, too, and not just here, obviously, the what is known as the SIS, the Secret Intelligence Service abroad, you know, MI6, GCHQ, and all of the other functionaries as well. But in as much as the rest serve the CIA, really, because while the CIA is sort of a proxy of, you know, the Anglo-American establishment, if you will, it is still the root, the tip of the global chaos spear. So as long as the CIA exists, there will never be peace. It's just that simple. So moving on, Jordan Peterson. Actually, before we play the first clip, there was, you know, I mentioned Wednesday. I don't think, did we play the clip? I don't remember if we played the clip on Wednesday. If we didn't, I was thinking about it. The monk debates. I mentioned maybe we'll play that clip first, because I know that we played the clip before Jordan Peterson on the Eye, and that really is the definitive statement as far as Jordan Peterson is concerned regarding, you know, who and what Jordan Peterson is. But I think, well, let's just, I'll find the other clip and we'll listen to this one first. I don't know if that clip is ready yet, but the first clip is Jordan Peterson referring to the eye. You know,
more that, representations of God the Father. I like these representations. I like the triangle idea. I mean, I don't know why God is wearing a triangular hat. It's a, kind of a strange fashion choice. But I think it's associated with the idea of the pyramid, and I think that's associated with the idea of the hierarchy of authority. And I think that's why the Egyptians put their pharaohs inside pyramids. I know there's more to it than that, but I think some of that has to do with the notion of this hierarchical structure. You see this on the... Now, that's speculative, obviously, and I don't want to make too much of it, but I can't help but think that there's something to that. See, that's on the back of the American dollar bill. I like that a lot. That's like the Eye of Horus from the Egyptians. And so the idea here is something like, at the top of the hierarchy is something that is no longer part of the hierarchy. Right? So if you move up the hierarchy enough, what happens is that you develop the ability, as a consequence of moving up that hierarchy, to be detached enough from the hierarchy so you're no longer really part of it, and so that you can move in all sorts of different hierarchies. And the thing, the idea here is that the thing that you're really developing is the capacity to pay attention. And I would say, from a mythological perspective, the one thing that seems to compete with the idea of the spoken word as the source of the extraction of habitable order from chaos is the eye, is the capacity to pay attention. So Marduk, for example, the Mesopotamian creator god, who emerged in the hierarchy of Mesopotamian gods and came out at the top, right? He was the victor of the gods. He had eyes all the way around his head, and he could speak magic words. And I really like that. I really like that idea. And the Egyptians developed that idea too, because their god Horus was the eye. Everyone knows the Eye of Horus. That image is so compelling that we still know about it. Everybody has seen the Eye of Horus with a really open pupil. And what the Egyptians learned was that the open eye was what revivified the dead society. It's so smart. So what do you do if your life isn't in order?
All right.
Bloody well pay attention.
Bloody well pay attention. The eye, that concept is so smart. It's so cool. And the pyramid represents the hierarchy of how did he say that? I forget. Basically, you know, power and control. So he's, you know, drawing the pyramid and talking about the eye in the pyramid. And, you know, that's Jordan Peterson. I mean, you listen to him, and he is definitely the intellectual that the kind of intellectual that you know, for example, Mike Huckabee was talking about in that quote that I cite often about, you know, Marxist revolution. How do you create chaos? To create havoc in the world, you need guys like Jordan Peterson. See what I'm saying? So this is an interesting, you know, to me it all comes down to this. And that doesn't mean that everything Jordan Peterson says is not noteworthy. It is, but I think we need to understand the context. And I really think, I mean, look at what is going on. It's kind of like, it's I would say it's similar to watching Richard Spencer. You know, I'm not saying that Jordan Peterson is a white supremacist. He caters to a certain audience, and the media is part of the theater. It's theatrics. And Jordan Peterson is part of the theater, if that makes sense. So he caters to a certain audience, just like Richard Spencer does. But the point about the Richard Spencer reference is that everywhere Richard Spencer goes, there is conflict. And Jordan Peterson stirs the pot. There's really, I mean, I don't even think Jordan Peterson would deny that. And there are some provocative clips. Don't get me wrong. So hopefully I'm not getting myself in trouble by saying, you know, there are a number of things he says that are thought-provoking, but he is a pot stirrer. There's, I think, little to no disputing that. So, you know, him talking about the hierarchy there, the triangle represents the symbol for hierarchy. Hierarchy can mean power to some, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, but you know, you heard him say it. So the operative excerpt there is him saying the open eye was what revivified the dead society. That's so smart. Holy cow. And if you have listened to this broadcast for any length of time, you know where I stand on that. Basically, I go to John 11, 25 and 26, and Jesus saying, John 11, 25 and 26 reads, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Well, I believe this. So that's kind of where I stand on that. The open eye, you know, like Jordan Peterson says, everybody recognizes. Sure, because it's the Time Warner logo, among other things. So you have to wonder, why is that? Why is the eye, I mean, rhetorically speaking, why is the eye the Time Warner logo? Anyway, I'm gonna play another clip. Yeah. So the other clip I want to play, I think I alluded to, maybe we did play an excerpt from this last week. I'm not sure. But the monk debates. I think so, yeah. So we're going to play little excerpt here of the monk debates. Jordan Peterson, Stephen Fry, Michael Eric Dyson, and what's her name? Oh gosh, I forget. Yeah, I did talk about this on Wednesday, but I don't think we played the clip. So Michelle Goldberg. That's who it was. Anyway, interesting, provocative. Speaking of the intellectuals and pot stirring, this, of course, falls into that bucket. So let's get that. And listen to some of this. This is kind of a long one. About 8 minutes, we might run into the break. We'll have to play it in over the next segment. But Stephen Fry's remarks, especially the way he closes, to me, his remarks are very provocative. I'm not particularly a Stephen Fry fan, but again, same kind of thing. I think, you know, there's definitely controversy. There's definitely pot stirring and definitely, you know, some specious rhetoric, I guess. That's kind of redundant. I can't even really think of how to quantify it. Oversimplification. Anyway, just listen to this. This is actually an excerpt from the video from the Jason A. YouTube channel titled Jordan Peterson's Most Shocking Message. Go ahead, please.
I think I'd just really say that the ghost hovering over for me is a letter Oscar Wilde wrote, and he said to Bosie's love, he said, the fact that you didn't get a degree is nothing, but you never acquired what is sometimes called the Oxford manner, and I'll say for that the university manner. Oscar said, I take that to mean the ability to play gracefully with ideas. I think that's disappearing from our culture, and I think it's a terrible... But I don't think we should underestimate how much this feeling is prevalent in the culture of this strange paradox that the liberals are illiberal in their demand for liberality. They are exclusive in their demand for inclusivity. They are homogenous in their demand for heterogeneity. They are somehow undiverse in their call for diversity. You can be diverse but not diverse in your opinions and in your language and in your behavior. And that's a terrible pity.
People don't think through what freedom of speech means, because they tend to think it means the right to criticize those who are in power, for example, which is one of the things it means. But freedom of speech actually means the freedom to formulate ideas badly and awkwardly in public while you're trying to think them through.
Including offending people?
Well, it's inevitable that you're going to offend people if you're going to talk about anything difficult, because if you talk about something difficult, then people are going to become emotionally involved. And that's especially true if you talk to large numbers of people about something difficult. Like if I address an audience of 1,000 people about anything vaguely contentious, which is obviously something that needs to be thought about, then a small percentage of them are going to be offended. And so what that means is that as your audience scales, or as the importance of the topic increases, your ability to say anything decreases. That's not good.
And that's part of this pernicious politically correct doctrine that I've been speaking about. When a hierarchy becomes corrupt, then the only way to ascend it is to exercise power. That's essentially the definition of a tyranny. But that doesn't mean that the imperfect hierarchies that we have constructed in our relatively free countries, which at least tilt somewhat towards competence and ability, as evidenced by the staggering achievements of civilization that we've managed to produce, it doesn't mean that the appropriate way of diagnosing them is to assume without reservation unidimensionally that they're all about power, and as a consequence everyone who occupies any position within them is a tyrant or a tyrant in the making. And that is certainly the fundamental claim of someone like Foucault. And it's part and parcel of this, what would you call it, this ideological catastrophe that's political correctness. I'm not here to argue against progress. I'm not here to argue against equality of opportunity. Anyone with any sense understands that even if you're selfish, you're best served by allowing yourself access to the multiplicitous talents of everyone and to discriminate against them for arbitrary reasons unrelated to their competences. It's abhorrent. That has nothing to do with the issue at hand. There's no way I'm going to agree that political correctness is the way to address any of that. And there's plenty of evidence to the contrary, some of which I would say was displayed quite clearly tonight.
Look, when you look at the world, you look at the world with a set of presuppositions. I outlined that in chapter 10 in 12 Rules for Life called Be Precise in Your Speech. It indicates that when you look at the world, you look at it through a value structure. You can't help that because you're always aiming at something in the world, and you're always aiming at something you want, and you're trying to get it. And so that means that you look at the world through a value structure. Now the question is whether or not that value structure is valid. And that's a very complicated question. Okay, so how do you know if it's valid? Number one, you lay it out and you act it out. You implement it perceptually and then you act it out. And if you get what you wanted, what the theory predicted, that's another way of thinking about it, but wanted is a better way of thinking about it, then the fact that that behavioral routine and perceptual structure produced the intended result validates it as a tool for obtaining that result. And that's a form of truth. Now, it might be the only form of truth, although I'm not convinced of that completely, but it might be. It's a very complicated question. And so if you immerse yourself in meaning, you can learn to do that. You can learn to do that. You can make that goal your highest goal. And so then the highest goal would be to be the sort of mythological hero, let's say, to embody and incarnate and imitate the mythological hero, like the imitation of Christ, which is what you're called to do if you happen to be Christian. That means that you live in meaning, and that meaning is the antidote to the suffering of life that would otherwise make you brutal and vengeful and unhappy and miserable, and like that young guy who just mowed down 12 people in Toronto. These are real things. You lose your sense of meaning, you end up in hell. And in hell, you do all sorts of terrible things. These are dreadful realities. And it isn't as if they're not grounded in the appropriate science.
So again, we're going to go right now to Stephen Fry and Jordan Peterson, get their thoughts on how the evening played out. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you both. We're just going to do a quick discussion with the online audience who's watching right now, just to get your reactions to the debate. And maybe just start with you, Jordan. There were some heated moments here. Did that surprise you, that the exchanges that you had with Michael Eric Dyson?
Well, I wouldn't say it surprised me. Well, I suppose it probably did. It just didn't seem like a very good tactical move.
You know, and I stand by what I said. I don't see any reason at all that my racial identity needed to be dragged into the discussion independent of my personality proclivity.
So what I'm saying to you is that I would invite you, in terms of the surrender of your privilege, to give you a specific response. Come with me to a Black Baptist church. Come with me to a historically Black college. Come to me to an indigenous or First Nations community where we're able to engage in some of the lovely conversation, but also to listen and hear. And when I added race to that, I was talking about the historically evinced inability to acknowledge others' pains equally to the one that they are presently enduring. So As a human being, I love you as my brother, but I stand by my comment.
Well, I've seen the sorts of things that you're talking about. I happen to be an honorary member of an indigenous family, so don't tell me about what I should go see with regards to oppression. You don't know anything about me.
You asked me a question, I gave you a response.
Yeah. You gave me a generic response, race-based response.
You. Jordan Peterson, I would like for you to come with me, Michael Eric Dyson, to a Black Baptist church. You been to one of those?
I would be happy to do that. By
okay,
the way.
All right, I'm going to hook you up.
I would say what I just said to Mr. Fry here is that it was a pleasure sharing the stage with him. I've rarely heard anyone ever deliver their convictions with such a remarkable sense of passion and wit and forbearance and erudition. It was really something.
I believe one of the greatest human failings is to prefer to be right than to be effective. And political correctness is always obsessed with how right it is without thinking of how effective it might be. But I'm not sure, and I would like this quotation from my hero Bertrand Russell to hover over the evening. One of the painful things about our time is that those who feel certainty are stupid, and those with any imagination and understanding are filled with doubt and indecision. Let doubt prevail. And I realize that that's not a political point of view. It is a personal one.
Right.
And the gap between the personal and the political, which is a space you obviously are very interested in as a psychologist, is one that is rarely explored. People are either so personal that it has no application in the outside world and the organization of human affairs, or they're so political and so much to do with structure and distinction between hierarchies and networks and so on, that they forget the individual. And that's the space in which the impassioned liberal lives, and it's not easy to do it, because you often do sound rather wet, and I'm aware that I
did.
I enjoyed it.
What should I say in closing? Get your act together much as you can. There's things to do in the world, and it would be good if everyone was out there doing them. Let's see how we could beat this old globe back into some reasonable shape, or into better shape than it's ever been. That would be a lovely thing to do. So, goodbye for now.
Yeah. Beating that globe back into shape reminds me of the quote that I keep coming back to, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and, you know, talking about that sort of concept, which, again, speaks to the clash of ideas, but especially that last bit by Stephen Fry, you know, that space between the gap, as he put it, between the personal and the political, which is a space he mentioned that Jordan Peterson is interested in as a psychologist. And there is quite a bit of – there's a fair amount of psychobabble in Jordan Peterson's rhetoric, but that notwithstanding, especially that little bit, you know, about living and meaning and all of that, you know, I think of Ecclesiastes 3:22 as far as meaning is concerned. I think we're complicating the simple, and that's something we'll touch on here in a minute with one of these other clips. But Stephen Fry talking about that gap between the personal and the political, and the delicate balance that must be struck, as I would put it, is interesting. It's interesting. And so, you know, going back, what did Jordan Peterson say? What was the word? The other video, by the way. So that video is titled Jordan Peterson's Most Shocking Message on YouTube. That's the Jason A. channel. And we jumped in at the 29-minute, 30-second mark. The other video was from the beginning of the video by the Dose of Truth YouTube channel, published April 2nd, 2018, titled Jordan Peterson Inadvertently Explains the Conspiracy Theorist Illuminati Symbol, which is kind of funny. It's a 20-minute clip, but we played the first 2 minutes or so. And it's inadvertently is that's funny. You don't inadvertently precisely describe something. You don't just stumble upon those things. It's kind of like saying, you know, it's the same analogy I use for the financial crisis of 2007, 2008, 2009. You know, it's interesting how that seems to expand every time someone talks about it. But the subprime contagion nonsense, you know, to say that was an accident is like saying I accidentally baked a pie. And so Jordan Peterson accidentally or inadvertently explaining this, it's not an accident. So back to this other clip that we played, Jordan Peterson's most shocking message and Stephen Fry's remarks in particular. That last bit especially, you know, homage to Oscar Wilde and Bertrand Russell notwithstanding, that was some pretty dope existentialist breakdown, as the kids might say. You know, the kids, that was dope. Anyway, it was pretty good stuff, I would say. I appreciated Stephen Fry's remarks. But again, you know, there is a reason for the monk debates. You know, it's not just a clash of ideas, or it's not just because you know, folks like Jordan Peterson, Stephen Fry, Michael Eric Dyson, and Michelle Goldberg have nothing better to do. It has more to do with this concept of the clash of civilizations. And we've sort of touched on that. We'll come back to that probably some point later. Samuel Huntington's book, for example, The Clash of Civilizations, The Debate. So anyway, that's a little bit more on Jordan Peterson. The Enlightenment. Do we go there? I mentioned on Wednesday we might play the Candace Owens clip. We might play that. Maybe I'll hold off on that. Anyway, we'll be right back. Stick around. More after this break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now, and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. All right. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Next, I think we'll go to the, you know, regarding the Masonic Illuminized Enlightenment and the Age of Reason. W. Kirk McNulty, bad guys, the WEOFM specifically, have they put together a series of videos, and you can find them sort of all over the internet in different places. WEOFM is stands for Worldwide Exemplification of Freemasonry, and not that anyone should watch this stuff, but you know, you got guys like Kirk McNulty and Ralph McNeil and others, you know, Freemasons for Dummies series, Chris McClintock and others. So I mean, this is, you know, this is them sort of pulling back the veil a little bit in what I would call H.G. Wells' open conspiracy fashion. Definitely not giving away, you know, everything, but it's, you know, it's interesting listening to folks like W. Kirk McNulty, for example. And what's really interesting, if you get a chance, I think we're gonna jump in at the 5-minute 20-second mark on a video titled "The Philosophical Background for Masonic Symbolism." You know, and it's a stupid age old discussion. You know, and one of the things they'll tell you is, well, we don't know exactly where Freemasonry began. It was a long time ago. You know, you have maybe back in the age of Solomon, because, you know, a lot of Masonic homage to Solomon's day and his wisdom and, you know, all that kind of nonsense. But the reinvigoration of Masonry really began, or the way the official narrative goes, the reinvigoration began kicked into high gear with the Premier Grand Lodge of England in June of 1717. So, you know, speaking of anniversaries, June 24th, 1717 was the official establishment of the Premier Grand Lodge of England. And then you have all of these other lodges after that. And some of the things the founders said and were outspoken about, how this probably wasn't a good thing. It was a backdoor to power. And you have guys like Adam Weishaupt and Miriam Schell Bauer, who changed his name to his daddy's money changing business, conspiring to use it to, you know, as a backdoor to the halls of power to hijack society in general without people knowing, in these secret meetings and things. So, and you come forward into the 20th century and you can see the transition, I think, represented from the old, you know, what Giuseppe Mazzini started, the concept of the mafia, basically going legit, you might say. It's not legit, but being corporatized, all of that being taken over, kind of like Las Vegas has been. You know, it's not crime families and crime syndicates running it now. It's corporations as crime syndicates. So that's kind of what has happened. And that all gets back to those two things that I mentioned in the beginning of today's broadcast. All that really needs to be said is there will never be security so long as we have anything called so-called central banking. How that, you know, the fractional reserve system, which is an oxymoron and a contradiction of terms, that and there will never be peace as long as the CIA exists. So those are two extensions of this other nonsense. Anyway, this video, we're going to play a clip of, again, the title, The Philosophical Background for Masonic Symbolism. You might watch it. You know, one of the things I was thinking yesterday, thinking about playing some of these clips, Jordan Peterson, that video, Jordan Peterson inadvertently explains a conspiracy theorist Illuminati symbol. Watching his his body language and his hand gestures specifically is very interesting. Again, hard to argue that that's accidental. So if you get a chance to watch that, that's interesting. In the same sense, this clip that we're going to play of W. Kirk McNulty is interesting. Watching his presentation, if you get a chance to see it, I mean, it looks – McNulty looks like hardcore MK Ultra. That's all I'll say about that. So anyway, without further ado, this is what I would call a little – another existentialist rant or diatribe, a Masonic existentialist rant on the – really, he's given a presentation, Philosophical Background for Masonic Symbolism. That's the title of the video. But, it, you know, there's a little history lesson in there, and it's very interesting how matter-of-fact he is about this. This is from the YouTube channel Lewis Masonic. And so a little bit of history. It's an interesting perspective, I would say, that we don't usually get, if you know what I mean. Anyway, if you're ready with that, go ahead, please.
Of the belief that it was possible for a human being to experience the divine presence here and now while he was alive. In classical times, philosophical construction was communicated in terms of what we call Greek myths. In the Renaissance, philosophy was Christian in nature, with an influence from the Hermetica and the Kabbalah. Francis Amelia Yates has called the philosophical essence of the Renaissance the Hermetic Kabbalistic tradition. And we ought to take a moment and think about Francis Yates, because she has brought the subject of Hermetica and Kabbalah into this presentation. Francis Amelia Yates was a reader of history at the University of London. That is an English academic rank comparable to associate professor of history. And she worked throughout the 1900s. She was very well received, and so well received, in fact, that at the end of her career, she was made a Dame of the British Empire, feminine equivalent of Knight of the British Empire. Her field was the history of thought. Now, she was particularly interested in the Renaissance and the thought of the Renaissance, and that she found the Hermetic Kabbalistic tradition, as she called it, to be at the center of that philosophy. With that in mind, let us look and see what the Hermetica and the Kabbalah say that might be of influence to Freemasonry. The Hermetica evolved in Alexandria, Egypt, in the 2nd century. It was a body of Egyptian thought influenced by Christianity and Hellenized Judaism. And it was translated, when the doctrine, folk from Florence purchased the documents and was translated by Marsilio Ficino in 1471. Kabbalah is the mystical tradition of Judaism. And it, as the Jews were expelled from Spain by the Christian reconquest of Spain in the late 1400s, a lot of Kabbalistic material found its way to Florence, where it was translated by Pico della Mirandola. The basic principles of the Renaissance philosophy are these, the basic metaphysical principles. The first, Neoplatonism. Let me define Neoplatonism. First, God does not exist. That seems a strange thing for a Mason to say, since Masons must believe in God. But we know what existence is, and whatever God is, it's too big to stuff into an idea we can hold in our heads. God is beyond existence. And for purposes of its own, God wills itself into existence as all that is. This is kind of useful because a creator is separate from his creation. And that sort of tends to place a limitation on the deity. Whereas the idea of Neoplatonism, where it says God is all things, is more comforting. Here is a quote from the Hermetica. "For God contains all things, and there is nothing that is not in God, and there is nothing which God is not. Nay, I would rather say not that God contains all things, but to speak the full truth, God is all things." Now, the next belief was that the universe was at two levels, the macrocosm, which was the whole universal picture, and the microcosm, which was mankind. Both were made according to the same set of rules, and the same laws applied to both of them. In the macrocosm and the microcosm, there are four levels: the physical level, the celestial level, the supercelestial level, and the divine. Those terms are thought up while the earth was thought to be the center of the universe. I would prefer to say today the physical level, the psychological level, the spiritual level, and the divine. The other principle is that opposites at each level are held in balance. Now, here is a diagram from the Kabbalah. It is a diagram of enormous complexity. It can be used to represent any open system.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. Anyway, the Christian stuff, you know, and him talking about God, you know, I don't know if for any Masons that are listening, I don't mean to step on any toes, but you may not know it, but your Scottish Rite Grand Commander, Albert Pike, in Morals and Dogma, wrote that the God that the Masons serve is actually Lucifer. So I have a friend of mine who was very knowledged up, you might say, woke. No, I hate that term. Anyway, but it's Friday. It's a little, you know, irreverent Friday. Anyway, I have a friend who was very knowledged up. Yeah, as I would say. And he didn't know that. He's a Christian guy. Good, you know, I would call him a Christian guy, a Christ follower. And, you know, not a Mason. It was just part of the conversation. I said, you know that Albert Pike wrote in Morals and Dogma that the God of the Masons is Lucifer, right? And I'm paraphrasing, but he said, no, I never heard that. Are you sure? I said, yeah. And he, to be sure, you know, he wanted to be sure. So he actually went on Amazon and got a copy of Morals and Dogma. And the next time we met, he said, yep, sure enough, there you go. I think it's, I forget what page, it's back there a ways. But you know, you hear all of this stuff. I mean, going back to, you know, Hellenized Christianity and the leavening of things, you know, it's quite a history lesson. I would say this is sort of a counterpart to the late, great Jack Otto's last talk, if you know what I mean. This is the Masonic historian's viewpoint. And so it's provocative to understand what he's talking about, this Hermetic, Kabbalistic, Zohar-inspired tradition that has been brought out into view increasingly since the 1400s. And so, you know, what else was happening around then? Only thing I'll say is, remember the song that a lot of us learned as kids in school, you know, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And so there were some things happening. Every once in a while, we circle back around to the who's who in the zoo discussion. The two main groups that people groups that we hear about referred to as Jews, the Ashkenazi folks and the Sephardic folks, neither of which I would classify as Jews. The Ashkenazi are descendants of Japheth, not Shem, so they're not Shemites by nature, not to affiliate themselves with Ashkenaz, certainly. And Sepharad was a region mentioned in the book of Obadiah near Spain. So, and, you know, again, the late, great Jack Otto's last talk, you can hear more about that and what was going on. And so there's a lot of intrigue and deception throughout history. And here is the sort of Masonic take on that. Anyway, not that we need to give that any more time than we've already given it. It's just an interesting perspective. And I think it sheds light on why we're seeing certain, or why we have seen certain things and certain talking points. And for the folks who would consider themselves Christians, you know, it, I think it answers some questions there too, why you have certain things. I mean, on certain years, I cover things like Christmas and Easter. You know, how is it that we're, you know, the Christian community is celebrating a pagan fertility goddess? It's kind of weird. So, you know, you get the Masonic Illuminized sort of counterpart to history that explains those sorts of things. And again, that was W. Kirk McNulty in the video, The Philosophical Background for Masonic Symbolism. I guess we'll cram one more citation in, and then I'll go to the Walden excerpt at the top of the second hour. So anyway, so there's that, as Richie from Boston would say. Stick around, we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com. Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law.
When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special. But I'm a
welcome back. Final segment of the first hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Friday, May 25th, 2018. Speaking of housekeeping, I mentioned the Candace Owens thing. That was interesting. The playing the black card, the PragerU video. Speaking of housekeeping, Nora Ericat on CBS News. I just think that's interesting, too. Speaking of the pulling back the veil, but not really, not entirely. You know, again, someone as well informed as Nora Ericat, not saying, but there's a plan. I mean, even Wesley Clark said 10 years ago, 11 years ago now, you know, the foreign policy coup that was, as he said, you know, I heard about this in the 90s, the early 90s. Now that the Soviet Union has collapsed. And how did that happen? Zbigniew Brzezinski. Oh, yeah, we created both sides of a conflict, drew the Soviets into the Afghan trap. So for someone as well informed as Nora Ericat to articulate the points that she did on CBS News, but not to get to that and not to basically help Americans. See, that's the thing. You know, when you don't give someone the Rosetta Stone, that's interesting. And I try to do that in as much as I am able on this broadcast. For example, I will tell you all the time, I mean, like those two things, you know, as long as we have so-called central banking, there will never be security. As long as the CIA exists, there will never be peace. All of this conflict, I think, folds into the narrative outlined in Pike's letter to Mazzini back on August 15, 1871. And it's the most prophetic, historically accurate, and provocative letter that was never written, apparently. So the letter allegedly outlining three world wars, a third by colliding the fomenting and colliding the forces of political Zionism against political Islam. You can't go a day without seeing that in the headlines. And of course, this month we've seen a lot of that because, you know, speaking of Noura Erekat and her CBS News appearance May 14, you know, the 70-year anniversary of bad guy nonsense. There's the tip of that spear, that conflict. So I try to, you know, give that information. But it's interesting when someone like that, as well-informed as she is, doesn't give the public the Rosetta Stone to go figure something out and to, you know, work it through and see if these things be true. That's telling, I think. Anyway, that'll do it for the first hour. Second hour coming up right after a short break. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.